everyone, to the M&M Book Club. I am Elena.
I'm Antonia.
And I'm Lily.
And let's get right into it.
Okay, so just to summarize what we've been reading, we went from chapter 25 to the end of the book, and the main thing is that Master Margarita, they both like die, but not really. They're kind of like, it's kind of like a Romeo and Juliet situation where they both die at like the exact same time, but they're not really dead. They're more like, they're kind of like their ghost selves, and now they're kind of dead from their like earthly forms, so they can be free. And they kind of just go to like a house where they can hang out together for the rest of eternity and be happy. So, yeah.
So then after they kind of, well, before they go to the house, I'm pretty sure, they visit Ivan, who says that he won't write poetry anymore and that he kind of wants to write something better since he had that conversation with the master about like how his writing wasn't really authentic or whatever.
Yeah, and that kind of ties into like the author's intent with how the Stalinist government worked and how so many people's art was being censored. And I feel like the author had a lot of like opinions about what true art was and how like if you are just writing for to please like a regime, then it's not like true art. And some other points that he makes are just like people focused too much on like official documents in the Stalinist government, saying things like a writer is defined not by any identity card but by what he writes, which was on page 354. And then he says, he kind of like makes fun of the authorities and makes fun of like the people in charge of the government, kind of saying that they're stupid, like things have settled down at this point, but the police and the investigators are still looking for Woland. And then at the end, they kind of just say like, oh, it was just like a mass hysteria, mass hypnosis. So it's kind of like the whole thing is focused on like saying that the government was wrong, basically, and that they're stupid.
Yeah, and then what happened is, like, we've talked before a little bit about the different ways that Woland kind of showed the people's greed by kind of tricking them. Well, in this part of the book, they start kind of setting fire to places that have a lot of greed. So one of those is this currency store that kind of sold a lot of goods, but it wasn't a place that was really open to the public or to the common people. It was more for wealthy and international people, and that kind of showed more of like the class separation that was during the Stalinist era.
I think a big saying that the author was trying to write in is that good and evil have to balance each other out to have like a sort of a perfect world, because on page 360, Woland says, "What would your good do if evil did not exist? What would the earth look like if there were no shadows?" And I just think that symbolizes how you can't just have good or evil. Like, you have to have both in order to, you know, not have one overshadow the other. I also think that the author brings up a lot about if people are capable of change, because the people who interacted with Woland didn't really change their lives or their morality. They just sort of live the rest of their lives in fear that he's going to return and cause chaos again. So they didn't learn anything from the experience because they didn't want to change. Whereas Ivan, he does show change because he wants to stop writing poetry and he wants to start writing like from his heart and more authentically. So I just think he brings up some good questions about morality and if people are capable of changing themselves.
Yeah, and then besides that, they also kind of show, like, the ambiguity of good and evil. So when, like, there's a part when Yeshua and Woland, who's supposed to represent, you know, like, Jesus and the devil, and they show respect to each other. And this is something that usually you wouldn't expect, because you see, like, good and evil as natural enemies. But this part kind of showed how they're not really in direct opposition of each other, and how there's kind of, like, this gray area. And Woland is also, like, never really shown as being either good or evil. You know, he is the devil, but he doesn't really do much but kind of trick people and make them, like, realize or show their sins. And he doesn't also, like, mess with people that have done bad things. He just is kind of like a trickster, like we've discussed before.
Yeah, and, like, I think another big thing that the author was focused on talking about was, like, the importance of love, and kind of how people will kind of, like, that the opposition of, like, people choosing money over love, and how love is really, like, the only thing that matters. I mean, we kind of see it with Margarita, where, like, the devil or Woland kind of sort of, like, likes her, I think, and wants to help her, because she makes a lot of decisions where she could have gotten things for herself, or she could have had anything that she wanted, but she chose love, and she chose helping other people. And we kind of see that in, there's a couple quotes. So, "Who told you that there is no truth, faithful, eternal love in the world? May the liar's vile tongue be cut out." And that was on page 215. And then even the devil says, "He who loves must share the lot of the one he loves," on page 381. So, like, even the devil is saying that he thinks that love is really important. And we kind of see, like, that with the Master and Margarita, where they get this really happy ending. Like, the devil gives them this really happy ending because they've kind of, like, left behind their bodies and, like, all their material possessions just to be with each other, because they love each other so much.
Another thing that this book really focuses on is art and its authenticity. Obviously, we have probably the most well-known quote from the book, "Manuscripts don't burn," which was on page 287. And the quote is sort of meant to symbolize how true art never dies. And the author himself, since he did burn the original manuscript of this book, I think that he might have included "the manuscripts don't burn" when he rewrote it, because he along with a few other writers in the Stalinist era would memorize their work, so that way even if they had to get rid of it, they would never fully forget it. And it parallels that in the book after they die, but before they go to the Forever House and before they go to visit Ivan, Margarita says, "Take the novel with you wherever you fly." And the Master responds, "I remember it by heart," on page 371.
Yeah, and besides that, there were also a lot of other parallels. And something that I was wondering is, if the author is represented by the Master and kind of calls himself the Master because he thinks he's, like, highly in some way, because throughout the book it kind of feels like he thinks that he's gone through some, like, deep realization and, like, is enlightening others about the downfalls of Stalinist society. And also, like, in the book when we have, like, the cleansing with the storm and, like, setting fire to places of greed, it kind of feels like he's, like, the one guiding everyone to, like, realize just everything that's wrong. And another parallel is that, of course, like, the criticizing of the Stalinist government and the authenticity of art. And I was wondering if this was maybe because of how harshly his own work was criticized, where he feels like he needs to, like, take it out on others, because he feels so strict about, like, what he thinks authentic art is. And yeah, something else, like, when it comes, I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that.
Not really.
No, I think the master definitely is sort of like a self-insert character for the author, and I think Margarita is supposed to be based off his wife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same.
I do find it a little funny how, even though the master was, like, supposed to be, I don't know, the hero or whatever, he was sort of really neurotic, like, for a self-insert character, I would have expected him to be more of, like, a manly man or whatever, but I don't know where I'm going with
that. Do you guys recommend this book?
I would.
I would to, like, specific people.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, yeah. If people don't usually read in their free time, I probably wouldn't recommend this, just because it is dense. There are a lot of things to remember, a lot of interconnecting plot points that get confusing.
Mm-hmm. And it's so long.
Yeah, it is also long.
And there's so many characters, and also, like, all the magic kind of makes things confusing.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you never know if something's, like, a dream sequence, or if it's actually happening, or if it's both, because sometimes it can be both in this book.
Yeah, and then it also switches, like, between the Pilates story and, like, the main one.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a lot of moving pieces. I feel like if there are any college courses on either classic literature or books that are, like, satire, I feel like I would recommend this book to them. But you know, I did enjoy it, but it's not for everyone. I do know that.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I feel like it's for older audiences who have, like, maybe, or people who just have more experience with literature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Do you guys have any, like, final thoughts on the book before we wrap this, our final podcast up?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I mean, it was nice to read. It's very pretty. I know that has nothing to do with anything, but it's a very pretty book, so it definitely calls your attention.
Wait, like the cover or the writing?
The cover.
Yeah.
I mean, the writing is normal.
Yeah, like, the writing is kind of, like, no-nonsense. Like, there aren't a lot of, like, really beautiful, like, descriptions of stuff.
Yeah.
But, and also, like, you feel kind of accomplished once you finished it.
You do, yeah.
Like, I read that, and also, I understood it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I really liked, you know, the devil and his little trio of chaos makers. I thought they were fun to follow around.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Behemoth.
Yeah, me too.
I liked how a literal demon was scared of Margarita just because she, like, boxed him on the ears.
Yeah. But I think we can wrap it. We can finish, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is our last podcast. Hope you enjoyed.
Bye. Bye.